The Fed Chair Speaks.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke says the nation's financial regulatory system needs an overhaul. He says the government should strengthen oversight of banks, mutual funds, and large financial institutions whose collapse would put the entire economy in peril. In comments this morning to the Council of Foreign Relations, Bernanke said, too big to fail, the bailout mentality has gotten out of control.
Government rescues of too big to fail firms can be costly to taxpayers, as we have seen recently. Indeed, in the present crisis, the too big to fail issue has emerged as an enormous problem.
And speaking of too big to fail, Citigroup is doing some in-house marketing. Its CEO sent out a memo to hundreds of thousands of global employees. It was an effort to quell any thought that the bank is in dire straits. Marketplace's Renita Jablonski joins us now. Renita, what did this email say?
Well, essentially, CEO Vikram Pandit said, hey, we're a lot stronger as a company than the dollar something our shares are trading at right now. He told employees that price doesn't represent Citigroup's capital strength or profit potential. And he actually said the company had an operating profit in the first 2 months of this year, just over $8 billion before taxes.
So what didn't Pandit say?
Right. Well, he didn't mention at all how any big credit losses or other charges would at least partially offset this profit he's talking about. He did say the capital strength is going to be solid, thanks in part to the government help, $45 billion that the government has so far poured into Citi.
So we're talking about the government help. Of course, there's this report this morning about further help from the Fed. What's going on there?
On top of all this, the Wall Street Journal is saying this morning that the government's actually taking a look at additional ways that it could stabilize the bank if some more problems arise, calling this contingency planning.
All right. Marketplace's Renita Jablonski joining us this morning. Renita, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Some of that Citigroup news causing stocks to rebound today. The Dow up about 3% at this hour, 188 points. The Nasdaq up 3.5%. The S&P 500 about 3.33%. European markets up for the most part. Asian stocks closed mixed. For sure, most companies don't want to make it on this list. Credit ratings agency Moody's is publishing its so-called bottom rung. It looks at nearly 300 companies it says are most likely to default on their debts. You can imagine there's a bit of a fuss over this latest list. Here's Ashley Milne-Tite.
Traditionally, the three main ratings agencies only rated companies with a low likelihood of defaulting on their debt. So the fact that Moody's is now publishing a list of companies in trouble is odd, says Christopher Whalen of Institutional Risk Analytics.
It's a little bit sensational. When I see something called the bottom rung, it looks like the sort of thing one pitches to hedge funds who are going to go out and try and sell the stock of these poor companies before they expire.
Moody's has been criticized for overrating bonds that turned out to be subprime and contributing to the financial crisis. Whalen says this move could be seen as preempting another mistake, but he says it's more likely Moody's is just following the bearish herd.
You know, that, I think what they are doing is what everyone else is doing, which is noticing that the markets are weak and many companies are under stress.
Some companies on the list, like Kodak, say they don't deserve to be there. Other names on Moody's bottom rung are GM, clothing company Quiksilver, and entertainment company MGM Mirage. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
It's certainly not funny to be unemployed, but comedian and NBC late-night host Jay Leno says those who are jobless should at least get a free laugh. He's taking his comedy stimulus plan to one of the hardest-hit areas of the economic fallout, Michigan, where the unemployment rate is 11.5%. Leno will perform in Detroit, where the NBA's Pistons play. Tickets to the April 7th show, parking, even refreshments will be free. But only those who say they're out of work can get in. You're listening to The Morning Report on Tuesday, March 10th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. European plane maker Airbus returned to profit last year. The company outdid its old rival, Boeing. But as Stephen Beard reports from London, there are some grey skies ahead for both companies.
After 2 years of losses, Airbus's parent company made a profit last year, $2 billion. The plane maker cut its costs and solved the technical problems dogging its new super jumbo, the A380. Airbus did better last year than Boeing, delivering a record 483 aircraft. But this may be as good as it gets for a while. Howard Wealdon is with the BGC Group. He says the global downturn is having an impact. Airlines are starting to withdraw some of their orders for new planes.
We've already seen Air France cancelling two. Other airlines are doing the same, or they're deferring the delivery date. That causes havoc for aircraft makers. So we could have some worse news to come through 2009.
And he says Boeing, which is still struggling with its new plane, the Dreamliner, could be even worse affected. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Signs of weakness today in the world's third largest economy. China's consumer prices fell for the first time in more than 6 years last month. From Shanghai, here's Marketplace's Scott Tong.
Chinese consumer prices in February fell 1.6% compared to last year. This hasn't happened since 2002. Economists see a couple things happening. Global raw material prices are down, which lowers costs for producers. And there's not much demand for Chinese exports right now. That leaves manufacturers with excess inventories. That pushes down prices even more. Chinese officials today described the situation as grim. But they were also quick to say they don't anticipate prolonged deflation. The government says its $585 billion stimulus package will perk up spending and consumer prices. China isn't the only place battling deflation. Ireland, Taiwan, and Thailand are trying to fend it off, too. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Patent reform. Yeah, sounds boring and nerdy, but it could be just what the country needs to escape the fallout. A Senate committee considers a patent reform bill today. The changes are expected to spark fierce debate. From the Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio, here's Marketplace's Janet Babin.
If enacted, the new patent bill would give credit for an invention to the first person who files for a patent, not necessarily the first person to create something. Small companies and individual inventors don't like that. They often lack the money needed to file a patent application first. But this issue isn't just about big companies versus small inventors. It's more industry versus industry. The new law could save companies like Google and IBM millions of dollars. It would limit damage awards in patent infringement lawsuits. But pharmaceutical and biotech firms are mostly against the changes. They fear lower penalties for infringement would undermine the value of patents. University of Iowa law professor Mark Janis says Google and IBM may get the reforms they're looking for.
It could pass. But I think we ought to stop and ask, you know, whether it will accomplish what anyone seeks to accomplish with it.
Janice says one size does not fit all, and that judges and juries should be allowed to decide patent infringement damages on a case-by-case basis. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
A huge gathering of American Indian businesses continues today. It's the annual Reservation Economic Summit in Las Vegas. There's plenty of talk there about tribal casinos, Native American entrepreneurship, and poverty, which still plagues many reservations. But in the first of two parts, Lori Stern of American Radio Works profiles one Indian reservation trying to lift its fortunes through wind power.
The Lakota Sioux call the wind their relative, constant and strong. Now they're going to put that relative to work.
Our focus is developing the wind and getting it sold now. That's our focus.
Eileen Briggs is president of Four Winds Energy Corporation. She says the tribe has been measuring the wind for a decade, getting ready for the right deal. The right deal turns out to be an agreement with Boston-based Citizens Energy to build a $400 million wind farm. Carlisle Duchino works for the tribe's environmental department.
There's been a lot of interested developers going back 8-10 years. They were wanting to give the tribe a portion rather than a piece of the pie.
But with Citizens Energy, the tribe will get a 20% ownership stake and will also collect fees from leasing land for the turbines. The project could help the tribe become financially self-sufficient.
We need hope. Our young people need to see that we have something that's moving us forward.
The Cheyenne River Reservation lies just west of the Missouri River in central South Dakota. More than 1 million acres of grazing land for cattle and buffalo. But leasing land to ranchers isn't very lucrative. And the only other jobs here are with the tribal government or the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The average income is only $8,000 a year.
Try being out of money, so you're working for $12 an hour or less.
The wind project may not be profitable for years, but it will provide jobs of all kinds and a way to retain native talent.
Well, you would need your biologist, your archaeologist, all the sciences. We have those kind of people out there, but they've left the reservation. That would bring them back.
The tribe has applied for a place on the grid that supplies electricity to South Dakota. If the plans play out, turbines could be turning in 3 or 4 years. In Eagle Butte, South Dakota, I'm Lori Stern for Marketplace.
Tune in tomorrow. Lori will look at how this wind project could change the lives of tribal members. A cup of morning joe can go a long way, but exactly what kind of joe could take Rwanda's coffee market a long way, too? Anna Boyko-Wyrock reports.
A lot of Rwanda's economic future depends on what happens right here, on a tiny island in the middle of Lake Kivu. Walking around, your feet sink into the hay under acres of coffee trees. Their beans grow at high elevations in volcanic soil, making them fragrant and sweet. Last year, coffee like this made Rwanda $47 million U.S. dollars. It's the country's most lucrative export. But in the scheme of things, Rwanda is just a tiny part of the global market. Alex Kanyankole is the director of the Rwandan Coffee Board. He says growing specialty coffee is the only way they can get ahead.
We only stand an advantage if we produce high-quality coffee that can be admired because of its distinct quality.
In the past, farmers were encouraged to produce a large volume of coffee. Then the price plunged in the late 80s. Peasants were left with a lot of coffee trees, but nothing to eat. This time around, they're trying to avoid that. The government wants their beans to be the Gucci or Chanel of the coffee world. But to do that, they need this guy. The coffee cupper, the official taste tester. He slurps up the coffee and spits it out. Then he rates it on things like acidity and sweetness. If they're deemed worthy, these beans are sold to stores across Europe and the U.S. But some of the profits filter back to Rwanda's local communities. Emmanuel Ruakaga Nzungize is president of the COPAC coffee cooperative. He says coffee proceeds help his farmers.
La COPAC a pu construire une première école ici.
Our organization was able to build the first school here in 2005. The next year we built another just a little ways down from the factory.
Sales of luxury goods are down everywhere, but the Rwandan Coffee Board isn't worried. They say people will keep drinking coffee, even high-end brands, during a global recession. In Gisenyi, Rwanda, I'm Anna Boyko-Wyrock for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Tuesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.